14.9.3, the bottom table, deals with the minimum shore frontage requirement, and you see that there's a new footnote in the downtown shoreline column, 3.12, that says you don't have to have any minimum shoreline frontage for a principal structure for commercial and non-commercial occupancy, including any dwelling units in the structure. Again, these changes that take away the dimensional requirements for dwelling units have been given preliminary approval by DEP. On page 6, the next table is minimum rear setback. A note's been added to the DTS column, 25 feet. The footnote 6.2, and that applies to the waterfront walkway. Oh, I guess, here it is right here. So there is a structure setback, too. I forgot that I added that. So we're talking about principal structures, parking lots, decks, and porches now. Will be subject to that 25-foot setback from the waterfront walkway. The next table is maximum lot coverage. DEP has agreed to a no maximum lot coverage and for commercial or non-commercial use, so that footnote has been added under the DTS column. We still have limitations in the downtown Shoreline District that pertain to residential properties, the properties down this end of the district. For example, the houses that are down here would still be limited to the 80% lot coverage. There's 20% lot coverage in the other Shoreline districts that surround our water bodies out back.
Under this 13.15.8.1.7, you changed number 7 to change, and then the very last thing says section 14.9.7, which doesn't exist.
Well, it does. It's just that it's not reproduced in this. There were no changes made to that table, so.
No, then we haven't seen it.
Well, hold on a second. Which
page 3? Yeah, what?
We're back on page 3 to here. Yeah.
Yeah.
14.9.7.
Oh, okay. Then we flip over to page 6.
Yeah.
There is no 14.
Gotcha.
Because it's the same.
All you're seeing in this packet is portions of the ordinance that are amended, so it's not reproducing it in its full. So there are pieces that are missing. I contemplated doing that, but for so many pages that I thought, well, let's just talk about where the changes are. 14.9.7 Ed is the table that talks about shoreline setbacks, and there's no changes proposed in that table. That's why you don't see it here. Section 16, on page 6, there's no changes on there. The change is on page 7, 16.3.1.1. This again is from DEP's guidelines, where now if you're expanding a non-conforming structure, you have to have a plan that's approved, first of all, and that plan has to be recorded at the Registry of Deeds in Ellsworth within 90 days of the date of approval.
So how would this happen? What would be the mechanics for making that happen for the town of Bucksport?
Well, an expansion will be either subject to CEO review or planning board review. Whoever does the review and approves the project then would say, you have to record this at the Registry of Deeds within 90 days.
Right. We've done that before and it's not happened in the past, way back. So what would happen? How would we know that they've done that in 90 days? Where's the follow-up to that to show that they've done it? Do we give them something to fill out?
have the formed
registry sent back to us saying, I just...
Maybe they don't get the permit until they come back with a...
What I have done in the past is I've typically asked them to provide us with a copy with the recorded information stamped on it. And they've done that.
Okay. I mean, if you're following, that's all it... As long as it's being done and we got a record of it somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
It has happened where a Board of Appeals variance never got recorded. It happened once in my recollection.
Yeah, we had one recently, last year or something.
What happened in that case is you have to go through the process all over again. Go back to the board and do the variance appeal all over again if you fail to record it. Because if you don't record it in that 90 days, the variance is void. Doesn't happen very often, though. So we're up to section 20 already. This is the last section that has definitions, and all these definitions are right out of the DEP guidelines. No changes in the wording. But these are definitions we need to have because all these terms are used. I won't go through each one individually. If you have any questions, just let me know.
I like that term where people frequently gather and linger. I've never seen that.
The page 8 is where the addendum 3 begins. And the first one pertains to exemptions to the clearing standards that are in section 12.8. Again, this is all taken from DEP's guidelines. The only changes that I made are wherever a portion of a DEP section number is referenced, I converted that to a section reference in our ordinance. Number 2 deals with hazard trees, storm damaged trees, and dead tree removal. And this is going to come in quite handy because more than once I've been asked to whether or not a tree on a shorefront property can be taken down because they fear that it might crash on their camp. And we didn't have too many standards to apply in our shoreline ordinance, so this is one reason why DEP has done that, to clarify when it's appropriate to say take the tree down and when it's not. And if there's any remediation needed if you do take out a storm damaged tree. And the last section, 3, is the revegetation requirements. This is what's going to pertain to the revegetation of the Catholic Church property. As well as any other properties that have been illegally cleared in the shoreline zone. Any questions about addendum 3?
When they ran the pipeline through, or the new line through up at Orrington, they removed all the trees beside Dark Mountain Road. That's up, I don't know if you're aware, at the end of Long Hill Road where it meets the Center Drive.
Mm-hmm.
When they crossed that, they cleaned all them trees right off that was buffering Dark Mountain Road from that construction from the overhead wires, and they were required to go back. The company that did so was required to go back and put trees in. I don't think they put a native tree in there. It's all like flowering.
Yeah, it looks like all apple trees or something.
Yeah, it's nowhere near what the original vegetation was. Now is that that's allowed? They can put any species of tree in there they want.
I can't speak for Orrington or what the contract required for that work. But But this that's not shoreline, first of all, I don't believe.
No, it's not.
These standards are pertain only in shoreline areas.
And Jim, if you look at 3.2, number one, all trees and saplings removed must be replaced with native, non-invasive species.
Yeah, I thought, yeah, this is just shoreland, so I guess it doesn't apply to.
So that kind of gets into another proposed change that we should talk about, and that's on page 11, which turns over the regulation of timber harvest to the Maine Forest Service. Timber harvest in a shoreland zone. That's the only type of timber harvest that we currently regulate in a shoreland zone. So the DEP guidelines for shoreland standards has three options as to how you can deal with timber harvest regulations. One option is to completely turn over your regulation of that use to the Maine Forest Service, adopt their standards, and share the responsibility for enforcement, or keep the standards that you have already and be totally responsible for enforcement of those standards in the shoreland zone. The last time this came up, I'm not sure if this committee dealt with it, but I know the Ordinance Committee dealt with it, and at the time, the Ordinance Committee did not feel comfortable with giving up that control. So we kept the standards that we have now in our ordinance, which are fairly simple compared to the standards that the Maine Forest Service has now, or DEP's guidelines has. My thinking on this is, first of all, there aren't too many violations of the timber harvest standards that take place in shoreland areas. I think of just one that I've been involved with in the almost 19 years I've been here. And if they do occur, I believe that the people who deal with this on a daily basis are the experts. They know the standards inside and out. They know how to deal with the harvesters, and they bear the brunt of the cost of enforcement. So my suggestion to this board is to consider turning over the regulation of timber harvesting to the Maine Forest Service. And these changes that you're looking at now reflect that. The changes that we need to make in our ordinance to say that the town is no longer enforcing timber harvest standards in the shoreland areas or anywhere for that matter. We have no enforcement whatsoever outside shoreland areas for timber harvest. That's completely under the jurisdiction of the Maine Forest Service.
They already have that.
Yes.
In our room.
Yes.
They have the ability to act within a reasonable
Well, you know,
time.
I coincidentally, I went to a training session put on by the Maine Forest Service last Wednesday in Old Town. And it was a very interesting session. They don't have a huge staff. The people they do have cover wide areas. But the point I'm making about that is those people that do enforcement activities do it well. I mean, they know how to do it. They know the rules inside and out and their experience, where local officials like myself,
it's hard.
Yeah, you just don't have that. You can't find that expertise locally, or the enforcement ability too. I mean, to first of all, identify a violation can be tricky unless you know exactly what you're doing, and then to go through the enforcement actions, it can be expensive. So that's why I think this town would be better off by handing over that role to the Maine Forest Service and letting them deal with it in the way they feel is appropriate. The one thing that I did learn that I didn't realize, and it's not reflected in here, is that we right now we have certain shoreline areas where we prohibit timber harvests. That would be the downtown shoreline district, commercial fisheries, maritime activities, stream protection overlay districts, and the Tannery Brook overlay district. We prohibit timber harvests in those areas. If we turn over the regulations to the Maine Forest Service, we would not be able to have those prohibitions because their standards do not prohibit timber harvests in any shoreline district.
It wouldn't affect downtown.
No, you're not going to see a timber harvest in this in the downtown shoreline district. Or
you know, look at those trees out there, Jack. Right now, they're pretty good. Take a few of them down.
Those oak trees.
The timber harvest you will see will be either in a limited residential district out back or resource protection district out back. Right now, the only timber harvest in a shoreland area that requires a town permit is if it's in the RPO district, resource protection. And I've issued, I think, two, maybe three of those in my time here. And again, I'm relying on a forester to tell me what the timber harvester can take out and comply with our standards. So it's really the burden of proof is put on the harvester. They have to have a forester to submit the plan. And that's it. That's the extent of my involvement. I'm not sure if the Maine Forest Service would do much more than that. If the violation was reported, they would investigate it. But there's nobody from the Maine Forest Service going out and watching timber harvest to make certain that they follow the prescribed plan either. So,
boy, when they find one, though,
and
it can be bad.
I had a harvest at my place a couple summers ago, and it was 4 months before I got the permit because they were so backed up. Mm-hmm. We were actually done before I got the permit to go ahead. So they are, like everywhere else, they're understaffed and overworked and undermanned. So.
Yeah. If the town chose to turn over complete control to the Forest Service, they're saying you have to completely wipe any reference to timber harvesting completely out of your ordinance. But I asked one question because we have on our tables here, as you can see on page 11, we have a land use called timber harvests. And I asked them, but you know, I said, we really don't want to take out the name timber harvest because it's a recognized land use in Bucksport. Our ordinance says that if you don't have a land use identified in your ordinance, it's prohibited until you clarify this new land use. So if we take out timber harvest, we're essentially saying you can't do it anywhere in Bucksport. That's why I think we should keep timber harvests in our table and just make reference across the line there that you're talking to the Maine Forest Service about compliance with the rules and regulations they enforce rather than the town.
Is that our decision to make, or is it the ordinance committee or the town council?
Well, they'll all be involved. It starts here.
Yeah.
You'll be making a recommendation to the town council, and probably it'll be referred to the ordinance committee for further discussion. But and you don't have to decide tonight about this. It's just I added this in here as at the end instead of in sequence with the rest of them because I wasn't quite sure what the feel of this board would be. Excuse me.
Jeff, is it my recollection that when they first started this, this was going to be a permanent change? If you change, you can't change back. Is that correct?
Change what?
Well, if we change over to Maine Forest Service as being the the watchdog on this thing, regulate. And then 10 years from now, we decide we don't want to use them anymore. We want to develop our own, go back to what we had. It is my understanding, and I'm just working off a weak memory here, that once you make the change, that's it. You can't go back.
That's not my understanding, Chris. That would be highly unusual, I think, to have that kind of restriction.
Right. I'm just curious.
Because, the towns have home rule. Yeah. And if they want to make up their own rules that are inconsistent with the state, then you do it, but you have to live with the consequences. The state would then say, we're not going to help you at all to deal with a timber harvest violation.
Yeah. Okay.
Go ahead. Why is timber harvest if it's not mentioned in our land use? Why is it considered a land use yet I can go out and cut my hay and it's not considered a land use? I'm raising hay on my growing hay on my property and
that's
and harvesting.
Agricultural use. Yeah, that's agriculture.
Okay, why is timber harvest not an agricultural use? Because you have to grow the trees, you have to and harvest them accordingly.
Well, there are different standards that apply, drastically different standards that apply. I think that's why it was separated out as its own land use. Okay. It's under in the Appendix K, timber harvests are under the rural land use categories, which also include commercial and non-commercial agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
It's just separated out as a separate activity.
Yeah.
It's different than farming. I mean, granted, yeah, you're kind of farming trees if you're growing trees, but that's not every case. I mean, some lots are harvested because the trees are overgrown. There's no management at all. Those trees, they're just going in and cutting the trees to whatever purpose, commercial purpose. Or
TSI, yeah. Normally.
Yeah. So, does that answer your question?
Now, is that different than tree growth?
Tree growth is a tax program, mm-hmm, that requires you to manage the land that's in tree growth, which would include a harvest.
Yeah, the foresters with the plan.
Yeah. So you have to qualify for tree growth. You actually have to actively manage that land. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every 10 to 12 years, you have to show that you've done something, whether it's TSI or weeding or whatever.
Select so many trees down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Passive active tax gets into it. It's quite complex. And it's also a kick in the butt when you get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
When you come out there nearly, I think, 20% penalty on it.
Yeah, and there's a crossover. If I wanted to plant 1,000 fir trees, and 5 years from now I'm harvesting those trees for Christmas tree use, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, the line is blurred there somewhere, you know. I mean, where is farming here and forestry there, you know?
I'm in it. I don't know how I'm going to get out of it.
So you see on page 11 and 12, the standards that would be deleted, they make up about a page total of language versus, I think, the new state standards that apply in Shoreland is about 4 or 5 pages of the DEP guidelines. So it's fairly detailed. It deals with a lot more things than what our standards dealt with. And that's why that would be a good reason for not having the town adopt those standards, because of the complexity now of those standards and trying to enforce it. Could be a nightmare. The people at the state level, at the Forest Service, know how to do this. They're the best ones, I think, that should be doing that. And they showed us a table or a display of the state that showed how many towns have actually converted over to having the state take care of everyone. There are very few towns left in the state that still have these standards.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I remember when it came up, they decided, Bucksport decided to keep their standards. Whoa, everybody else had gone the other way. And I don't know where that came from, but.
So there's a deletion of standards, there's also a deletion of the definitions that on page 12 that only pertain to harvesting, so those will be deleted as well.
Yeah.
The last change I want to share with you, I forgot to put in the packet, and that's a map change. This is a change that DEP is expecting. This is part of their agreeing to relaxing the dimensional standards. They wanted to be certain that those standard changes did not apply to the Irving lot and the Hanford lot, which are currently in the downtown Shoreland district.
It's hard to pass them around in a circle.
You guys all set?
Hello, Brent. I'm very perplexed. That's the hardest part of this.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So you see where the two lots are hash marked with the proposed change.
Yeah.
put these two lots in the Route 1 Shoreland District, which is the rest of the property on that borders on the shore side of Route 1 all the way to the town line. All that property, except for these two parcels, is in the Route 1 Shoreland District. So with this change, these two will be put in that same district. And it really doesn't change much. The minimum lot size is different, but it doesn't really establish any nonconformities to these properties.
Awesome. Yeah.
But this will satisfy DEP, their expectations that we exclude these two lots from the changes to the dimensional standards.
Hannaford might like that.
What about the gas station?
No. Comes out of the downtown Shoreland district. The rules for lot coverage just changed.
The Hannaford store is already a non-conforming structure because it exceeds the square footage limit that the downtown Shoreland district. It's also in the Route 1 Shoreland district. That's 3,000 square foot limit. It's called a Class C mercantile. We have that limit now. You can't have a store in this district that's over 3,000 square feet in size or on Route 1.
On the shore side.
On the shore side, yeah. So Hanover's non-conforming. Rite Aid, I don't think, is. I think they're under 3,000 square feet.
So we're looking for a motion here to...
Are we going to accept this tonight, or are we going
to... Are there any changes that the board wants to make to what's proposed?
I'm set.
As am I.
We could have a motion.
I think it's a good move.
I do too, and I initially, Jeff and I talked about the forest thing, but I really think the forest thing needs to happen as well, so it's kind of thrown in there. I don't know what the council would do. Do you think it would be better to do a double motion with everything but the forest and also the forest, or do you think it would be better just to put it all in there in one? Because I believe the forest thing is important as well, even though it's...
If you put it all in as one, wouldn't they be more likely to just say...
Well, I don't know. We could ask one of them here tonight. But so I'll make a motion.
Right.
I'll make a motion that we...
There's one more step you have to do before you make your recommendation. That is, you got to hold a public hearing.
Okay, so we have to set a date for that then, don't we?
Yes, and I would suggest that you set a date that will allow you also to include the marijuana changes to be held at the same public hearing. These changes you'll be reviewing at your next meeting. So I would suggest you hold your public hearing at least a week after that meeting, maybe 2 weeks after that meeting, so it's time to get the notice in the paper.
So that next meeting is June
6th?
6th?
Yeah.
And then after the conclusion of the public hearing, that's when you make your recommendation.
Okay. So our next meeting is June 6th, which so the hearing, would that be the time to have a hearing, though?
If it's the week after that, it's not...
Okay, right. Yeah. So that would be the 13th. I won't be here that night, but that's all right.
I wouldn't be there the 13th either.
Secretary takes over.
You are you looking to do that? Like, you don't have to hold on a Tuesday. You can...
Yeah.
I've got Wednesday the 14th open, but that's the only time. Tuesdays and Thursdays are a killer. That's why it's just a killer.
14th is good for me.
I have 14th? Flag day.
June 14th, public hearing?
Yeah. Does everybody think that's
working? That work for everybody?
6:30.
You're on the 14th.
6:30
Downstairs.
Yes, to be downstairs. Yeah. I'm hoping the council chamber is available then. I didn't check for this night, and I learned at the last minute that they had a meeting scheduled at 6. I just I failed to check, so I'll be certain that council's available on June 14th. I'll check tomorrow. If it's not, I'll let you know.
They're a little too close tonight.
Yeah, I know.
I took a shower.
Yeah, I'm not sure that.
I don't like being close to
David. I was going to say something.
I don't have your agenda in front of me, so I hope I'm not speaking out of turn. Too bad here on you. But when moving on to the the marijuana issue, you mentioned the social clubs and the retail sales. But there's actually five categories. There's the cultivators, process manufacturers, retail sales, testing labs, and social clubs. And the reason I bring this up is if you just leave it on those, it's for you to decide. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just throwing spaghetti on the wall and see what sticks at this point. But if you stay with the two, but rather expand it to five as part of what you're going to put together. If you don't do that and just have the social club and the sale of it, then I think you'll open up not a Pandora's box, but I think you'll open up some other things that you'll have to address, and that it has to do with land use code. For areas that will get into odor management, facility security, electrical standards appropriate to usage, plumbing code upgrades, access, egress, other life safety standards. I don't know that we have sprinkler requirements in the town of Bucksport for over 6,000 square feet, but inspection protocols, how to avoid facility contamination, air quality standards, noise standards, ventilation systems, carbon dioxide, other industrial gas standards, waste disposal, hazardous waste disposal and standards. It just goes on and on. I'm just throwing this. I didn't even think about this. It came out today in a document that town council gets every Monday, and it just open my eyes up to other things. So I can make a copy of this page for you, Jeff, if you want, or maybe you get it already. But
I think what the council has directed this board to do is to prepare a draft amendment to Appendix K that bans all those uses from the town of Bucksport. And actually, I'll give you one here. This is what the draft amendment is.
But that would be all five categories?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. And when I spoke, you want this? This is a copy of when I spoke about it earlier, I referred to retail marijuana establishments and social clubs. Now, a retail marijuana establishment includes all those individual categories, sort of an umbrella category. Yeah. But this treats each one individually.
Okay. Yeah. So I wasn't trying to be double. Like I said, just throwing spaghetti on the wall. But if you only went with those two categories, then the remaining three would be opening up to a whole bunch of stuff you have to get into.
I don't think the board ever intended that at all. I think Jeff's right.
I'm not. Again, just my two cents.
Oh, it's good to see you, though.
No, and my two cents in letting me contribute. Appreciate it.
I wanted to go real spaghetti.
Yeah.
Yeah, hungry.
Thanks, too.
So do I make a motion, or are we all set on the 14th?
Yeah, there's no motion needed.
All right.
Yeah, I think we'll have
the chair assess the public hearing.
Court hearing, right?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I forgot to hand this out. This came from the Friends of Silver Lake, an invitation to the board.
Yes, I'd like to hand those out if nobody else. Tomorrow night, Friends of Silver Lake having a meeting at the Rosen Building. A gentleman from the DDP is going to talk about, I'm passing around if anybody, talk about lakes flipping due to changes in their composition during the summer as a result of either oxygen depletion or whatever. I just got a text message saying there was going to be coffee or refreshments. I don't know, but I can't promise. The only thing I can promise is water and a PowerPoint presentation.
Can you bring me a coffee? Come on.
Well, no, she said it. She asked me, is there a coffee maker at the place? There is, so there'll be coffee there, too. Thank you for bringing that up, Jim. The other thing, may I ask one more favor?
Absolutely.
Hansel folks passed out an invitation, everybody here, do an interview. I'd really like to interview folks one-on-one, if we can find the time over the next few weeks, for maybe 15 minutes. What's that?
Tomorrow night.
Yeah, Chris, are they there, like, on Monday mornings that I could... Well, I got one of those, I think all the town councilors there, too, and I'm willing to do it, but every time I walk by the door, it's not open. Are they there, like, on Mondays morning sometimes?
She's there either Monday morning or Monday afternoon. She puts in her 20 hours, and she's there mostly all day on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Oh, Tuesday,
but if you
okay.
want to make an appointment, we'll make yeah. an appointment to either come out to your place, or you don't even have to come in. We'll find a way, but... Obviously, it's going to be easier. But we'd really, I'm going to be bugging the council
but
tomorrow
she's
night.
But she's in Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Yeah. And, but I'll have her get in touch. And if it isn't her, it'll be me, or it could be three or four other people doing it. That's all right. But if you want somebody specifically, in particular, we'll make that happen, too.
Well, if you want to come over to my house, I'll talk your ear off.
I know that. And I appreciate it. You have great wisdom.
I don't know about that.
But I'll be in touch. She's going to go after the council because she's heard from nobody so far. And I told her I would follow up with the planning board for the folks that are willing. I know you've been to some of our events, too. We'd really like to do a one-on-one. And I'm done. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, this looks really interesting.
Okay. Any other discussion? Hearing none. Motion to... adjourn? Anybody?
So move.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor?